Good morning, good morning, good morning. I'm Joe from Gotham Sound. Thank you guys for coming on a Sunday. I know this is a topic that you're like, ugh, do I have to wake up? So first hour and a half is going to be Nancy Adams, who's a CPA doing production, knows the production world, understands it. Nancy.
That's so nice of you. You haven't heard me speak yet, so I would hold your applause until I've actually spoken. I'm glad to be here. It's very nice to see you all. I saw that the attire was business casual, so I made sure that I wore my dress snow boots. I've been doing accounting for about 30 years. I know you're thinking, is she really that old? But yes, I am. I started off working in auditing, and I left a big firm and decided I wanted to do tax. And I kind of stumbled in the production world. I met someone at a cocktail party one night who said, you know, I really hate the accountant that we have at my boss's company. And I said, oh, really? And she said, yes. And, well, it turns out that he went to prison because he defrauded the Doris Duke estate, and they were in the market for an accountant. So I started working for them, a small documentary film production company, and so I started off working with a lot of producers in the doc world, and then it's expanded from there. So I work with feature films. I've done some work helping people apply for the New York State tax credit if they've done a feature. I've done some post-production accounting for small independent films. I do individual taxes for producers, directors, people with their own companies, and so on. So I kind of come to this with a little bit of experience in talking about taxes. I'm the person at the party that loves to talk about taxes, so if I don't answer any of your questions, you can come up afterwards, and I'd be happy to talk about it some more. So without further ado, then I'll tell you a little bit about tax and tax rules and so on. So there's my bio there. I do have a master's. It was a good thing. The objectives today, and that's so interesting. I'm not sure why we're getting a line through the bottom of it there, but I am going to talk about the last point so that there's no reason there's a line there. I want to talk a little bit about should I form my own production company? What are the types of entities that are available to me if I wanted to do that? What are the pros and cons of each? How are they taxed? Then I want to talk about for everybody what tax deductions are available to me, what are the rules on those, what are the limitations, what shouldn't I do? I don't actually have it in here, but I'll throw out a few points on what kind of record should I keep, what if I'm audited. Been through a lot of audits, and I can give you a little bit of benefit of the experience of what you don't want to do, what you want to avoid to be audited. And then just the last thing, the last point is accountants are quaking in their boots this year because it's the filling out the paperwork for health insurance and the Affordable Care Act, it's just egregious. Make sure you have the forms when you go to do your taxes because it's very important this year. So part of your choices on whether or not you should form an entity really depend on, is it just me? Am I thinking about doing this with another person? If you yourself are thinking of doing this, then you've got several choices. One, you could be a sole proprietor, which basically just means that I am a freelancer, I'm doing this, and there's no other formality other than this is what I'm doing. The next choice is to be a limited liability company, a single member limited liability company. Those are also called SMLLCs. Or you could form a corporation. There are two types of corporations that are taxed differently. If you form a corporation, it's born a C corporation. What is a C corporation? A C corporation is like all other corporations. It's like GM. It's like IBM. It pays tax on its own income, and then if it wants to give you any money other than compensation, it gives you a dividend, and then you pay taxes on dividends. An S corporation, I'll go into it a little bit more when we get there, but an S corporation is considered a pass-through entity, and it theoretically pays only one level of tax. You as the shareholder reported in your own personal income tax return. There are savings to be had if you are an S corporation over a C corporation, which is why there are a lot of limitations on who can be an S corporation. If you have two or more people, you have a few more choices. You could be a general partnership, which is kind of like the equivalent of being a sole proprietor. General partnership has no formality to it. You can theoretically, you could do it without even having a partnership agreement, although it's not advisable. You could have a limited liability company with a multiple member limited liability company. You could have a limited liability partnership, an LLP. That's typically only seen for professional type partnerships, for example, accounting firms, architects, lawyers. So that's typically where you see an LLP. Most other companies are limited liability companies, LLCs. Or you could also have the corporation, the S or the C. So what are the as I said, the sole proprietor and the general partnership are kind of equivalent. What are the advantages and disadvantages? Well, the advantage is the ease and cost of formation. In other words, there is no cost of formation, there is no formality to it. So I can essentially put up a shingle and say I'm Nancy Adams, certified public accountant doing taxes, and that's it. The biggest disadvantage is there is no limit to liability. If I don't have any kind of entity or structure, someone could sue me and all of my personal assets are at risk. Do you have a question? Oh, okay, I'm sorry. That's okay. So, by the way, if you have questions, feel free to ask them, raise your hand and I'll call on you. If there's something that's general and sort of benefits everybody, or I forgot to point something out and you have a question, ask that. If they're very specific to you and your circumstances, I'd be happy to answer those at the break. So the disadvantages, unlimited liability, lack of access to capital, meaning you are limited to your own personal resources, your savings, whatever you have is what you're going to be limited to in terms of starting your business. If you're planning on growth, it could be tough. So having a partnership or having doing it with another individual or doing it with other individuals can sometimes help to overcome the lack of access to capital. Your other choice there is obviously looking at whether you can borrow funds. So limited liability. What are the advantages and disadvantages of forming an LLC? Well, the biggest advantage is that there is limits of liability. So if someone sues you, they're typically limited to the assets of the LLC. They cannot go after your personal assets. Your home is not at risk. Your savings are not at risk. Just the assets of the LLC. There are exceptions to that, and I'll address some of those a little further. With an LLC, an LLC is actually a fairly recent invention. I mean, corporations are hundreds of years old. The LLC is probably formed within the last 30 to 40 years in terms of how old it is. One of the idea behind it was there are certain things that I like about having a corporation. There are other things that I like about having a partnership. Wouldn't it be great if there was an entity that could kind of combine the best attributes of both, which is why they form the LLC. The flexibility is I can choose how I want to be taxed. I can choose to be taxed as a partnership would be taxed, or I could choose to be taxed as a corporation if I wanted that kind of taxation. So an LLC offers you the flexibility in deciding what's best for me. There are no restrictions on who can be a member, with an S corporation, there are restrictions on who can be a member. You cannot have we'll get to that in just a second, but with an LLC, I can have corporate members, I can have partnership members, I can have foreign members. So there are no restrictions on who can be a member in my LLC. So with having no restrictions on who can be a member, that gives me greater access to capital because I might find a corporate partner that has some deeper pockets than I do. What are the disadvantages to an LLC? In Manhattan, the biggest disadvantage is it's very expensive to form. If I form an LLC, probably I'm going to spend, depending on where I have it or where I form it, an incorporation service is going to charge me $400. A lawyer, if I go through a lawyer to get it incorporated, is going to charge me more than that. And then there is a publication requirement in New York State that says that if I form an LLC, I have to publish in a newspaper of a certain size for 6 weeks in a row stating that I have formed this. The publication, if in the outer boroughs, it's a little cheaper. In Manhattan, it can probably run you $1,200 to $1,500 to do the publication costs. So it's a little bit expensive to do that. So what are some of the exceptions to the limits of liability? Personal injury. Let's say that, for example, any employer in New York State is required to carry, if they have employees, they're required to carry workers' compensation insurance. Let's say that I had employees, but I didn't have the workers' comp insurance. Then personal liability. If somebody's injured on my job, then I personally would have to come out of pocket to pay for their care. If I personally guarantee debt, then that is, if I sign a bank loan and say that I'm personally responsible for it, I can't then jump behind the LLC and say, oh, listen, I've got an LLC. I really am not responsible for that, not if you personally guaranteed it. There are certain tax debts that if you, the government considers you a fiduciary when you collect taxes on their behalf and don't remit them. So if you take out withholdings from an employee's salary and then don't remit it, they will come and knock on your door and say, excuse me, I believe that you owe this money to me. Where is it? Same thing with New York State and sales tax. I actually had New York State came to one of my clients' offices and knocked on her door. New York State will come to your house or come to your office to ask about sales taxes. If you commit fraud, then it's one of those things that there's no pass on that, on the exception to the limits of liability. And then there's an accounting phrase they call it, or a legal phrase they call it, piercing the corporate veil. And it's if you don't maintain a separation between yourself and the business, and you're treating the business like it's your own personal checking account, and then you don't pay someone else's debts, then they can come and say, listen, there was some fraud that happened here because you transferred over assets to your own personal, for your own personal benefit, and you didn't pay the expenses that you were supposed to. So that can be another exception to the limits of liability. Hang on 1 second. So I'm going to repeat this because they're recording it, so I want to make sure that we picked it up. So you're asking the question of whether or not members, partners in a partnership are considered employees. For employment tax purposes, no. They're considered partners, and partners don't receive a salary from a partnership. They receive what are called guaranteed payments. And when you receive guaranteed payments, those are kind of like salary, but the partnership doesn't pay withholding taxes. You pay taxes on that in your own personal income tax return, and you're responsible for self-employment taxes, the employer and employee share of FICA and Medicare. Okay, so if you and a partner are the only people in a partnership, then no, you are not obligated to carry workers' comp under New York State law. Same thing if you have a corporation, an S corporation, for example, or a C corporation, where you only have two executive officers. You're not obligated to carry workers' comp. There is an exception. And you typically, they're on that. So fast, New York State, you get a penalty letter from the Workers' Comp Board that, you know, it says, where's your workers' comp insurance? And, oh, here's your $5,000 penalty, and it's, you know, $1,000 a week. And then you respond, only two executive officers, so not responsible for workers' comp. But the minute you hire an employee, you better make sure that you have the workers' comp and the short-term disability in place, because you can get the penalties reduced, but you can't get them completely waived. So just know, and I'm sure that Tammy can talk a little bit more about insurance when she's up here, but just know that Those are mandatory things, and you better have them in place when you start. So C corporations, what are the advantages and disadvantages of C corporations? So I'll start with the second item. You can have different classes of stock. So if you think about, you know, your IBM and your GM and those things, they have common stock. They may have different classes of common stock. They may have preferred stock. They may have different types of ownership interest in the business. Thus, you have greater access to capital by being able to issue stock. Now, as a practical matter, when you're starting out, you're not likely to be able to attract capital in that way. If you were thinking about, if you were going to be the sole person in your company, then you have greater benefits that are available to you. For example, a C corporation allows its owner to have a medical reimbursement plan, whereby you can pay all of your medical expenses through the corporation. That's not something that's available in an S corporation. The only problem is that if you have other employees, there are problems in discrimination in terms of the benefits that you offer. So that one is a bit of a double-edged sword. The biggest disadvantage of a C corporation is double taxation. And by that, I mean the company owns its own revenue. It pays taxes on its income. If you want to take money out of the company, you can either do it as salary and pay yourself wages and be subject to all the different taxes, the employment taxes, or you can take a dividend. If you take a dividend, you are subject to tax on that dividend a second time. You pay tax on dividends from the corporation, if they're qualified dividends, and there are rules around that, most of the time they are, if they're from the earnings of the company, then you're going to pay tax on that to the feds and to New York State. The good news is that at the federal level, at least, you get a preferential tax rate. Qualified dividends for most people are taxed at 15%, but still you're paying tax on that twice. The second disadvantage listed here is true for both S and C corporations, and Anne pointed this out to me, that if you create your own loan out company, when you pay yourself wages, you've got to pay the employer share of FICA and Medicare, but you also have to pay federal and state unemployment. And the way that's calculated is that in New York State, you pay unemployment taxes on the first $10,500 of wages. And the rate at which you start out is 4.3%. That's the assigned rate that New York State applies. So that means that you're paying over $400 a year into the unemployment system. Now, if you are the sole shareholder of your company, let's say that this is your loan out company and now you're between jobs and you say, you know, wouldn't it be great to be able to file for unemployment? New York State is going to make it impossible for you to collect unemployment. Essentially, New York State says, if you want to collect unemployment, you need to dissolve your corporation because, you know, that's not what it's designed to do. So I know a lot of people that have just said, why am I spending $500 a year paying into federal and state unemployment when I can't collect it? And the short answer is I don't have a good answer to that. So maybe the other benefits outweigh that disadvantage. So what's the benefits or the advantages of an S corporation? So an S corporation is it's a pass-through entity, and essentially, with an S corporation, you pay tax only in the shareholder level. It's not completely true, but I'll explain that a little bit better in a minute. So let's say my company makes $100,000. I then turn around and pay myself $80,000 of wages, have some payroll taxes, and then I also make a retirement plan contribution of $5,000, so my net income from the company is $15,000. So how is that taxed? Well, at the corporate level, I owe no income tax other than a minimum franchise tax for New York State based on my gross receipts. And then in my personal income tax return, I have on line, I've forgotten what line it is, but on the wages line, I have a wage line that says wages, $80,000. And then further down in my tax return, I have a line that says pass through from a partnership or an S corporation. And so there I would pick up $15,000. And so I would pay tax on all of the income in my own personal tax return. So you avoid the disadvantage of the S corporation or the C corporation. Remember we said with the C corporation, you're subject to double tax. By having an S corporation, you're only subject to tax at one level in your personal tax return. The other advantage is that the dividend, which is what you call the pass-through income, that $15,000 of net income that I just mentioned, that if you then take that out of the company, if you write yourself a check for the $15,000, that is not subject to tax at the corporate level. It's only the pass-through that you've already paid tax on in your income tax return. Yep. They are not obligated to issue you a 1099. It's an interesting thing. It's issuing 1099s. I've been doing that for the last month or so. The technical rules say that I am not obligated to issue 1099s to any corporation. Sometimes people do, but you're not obligated to. So the biggest advantage of the S corporation is I only pay self-employment tax on what I'm declaring as wages. Now, if I'm a sole proprietor, let's go back if I'm a sole proprietor and I'm reporting this on a Schedule C in my income tax return, and I have $100,000 of net income there, I am going to pay self-employment tax on $100,000. That's 15.3%. There's a little bit more math involved than that, but it's about $15,000. So with the, if I want to make a retirement plan contribution, I make that after I've paid self-employment tax on that amount. I do not make it with sort of pre-self-employment tax dollars. It's after. So that is where the biggest advantage in an S corporation comes over being a self-employed person, is that if at the S corporation level, I said, you know what, out of that $100,000, I'm going to declare $80,000 as wages or $70,000 as wages, some amount of that as wages, but not the entire amount. I'm going to make a retirement plan contribution, and I'm going to make that contribution at the corporate level. So by making it from the corporation, I save in I'm making my retirement plan contribution with pre-self-employment tax dollars. So that is where there are significant savings in being an S corporation over a sole proprietor and reporting my income on Schedule C, is that I control how much I'm paying in self-employment taxes, and I can make retirement plan contributions with pre-self-employment tax dollars. So there are significant savings to be had with that. There are disadvantages to an S corporation. There are limits on the number of shareholders you can have. The rules say you can only have 100 shareholders. Now think of IBM or GM. There are millions of shareholders in that. With an S corp, you're only allowed 100. There are exceptions to that. Married couples are considered one person, so a husband and wife would only be, you know, one shareholder. You can only have one class of stock, so everybody has to have the same rights and interests. If I had several people in it, everybody has to have the same voting rights and the same, so you can't have more than one class of stock or otherwise it busts your S election. Same rule I mentioned there before, you pay into the unemployment system, but it's impossible to collect it. So how are each of the entities taxed? So I said, as the sole proprietor, gave you the example, if I made $100,000 as a sole proprietor, I'm paying 15.3% of that as self-employment tax are about $15,000. I get to deduct half of it, but still a deduction is not quite the same thing as paying the tax at 100%. Health insurance is deductible in the same way after I pay self-employment tax. So just like the retirement plan example, I'm paying with after self-employment tax dollars. Retirement plan contributions deductible in after self-employment tax dollars. S corporations are taxed. There's no federal tax at the entity level. There are a couple of kind of obscure exceptions to that, so I'm not going to go into them. At the state level, the minimum tax is based on your gross receipts. Most of the time, if you're doing 100, if you're using this as your own personal loan out company and you've got $100,000 to $200,000 of gross receipts, you know, your franchise tax is going to be $25 to $50. I have some companies that do production where, you know, they have $3 to $4 million of production a year, you know, frontline producers or somebody that are doing different things. And your tax there can go $1,500, $3,000 as the minimum franchise tax. It's kind of rare to hit the $4,500 level. You got to be doing a lot of production for that. And I mentioned that the income is passed through and taxable in your own personal return, not at the corporate level. That's a good question. So the question is, where do payroll taxes come into play for an S corporation? It's a really good question. So you might ask me, so Nancy, if I don't have to pay self-employment tax on what I declare as wages, in that example of $100,000 of wages, why pay myself any tax? Why pay myself any wages? Or why not pay myself only $20,000 of wages rather than $80,000 of wages? Payroll taxes are based on what you declare as wages. So you certainly have some control over that. Well, there's a concept in tax law called reasonable compensation. And the reasonable compensation says if you're doing something and you're providing services to your company, you need to be paying yourself out something that's reasonable. What's reasonable? Well, it's kind of in the eye of the beholder. The IRS, occasionally, they'll litigate this in two cases. One case is where you pay yourself nothing, and they'll come in and say, you know, nothing? That's unreasonable. And you pretty much lose the argument because any judge is going to agree with them that nothing is unreasonable. The other case where it shows up is grandma's on the family payroll. It's a family business, and grandma's getting paid out a salary of $2 to $3 million, and grandma's not doing anything. The IRS will litigate that and say, you know, that's unreasonable. But I don't see that often. So where you want to come down is you don't want to pay yourself nothing because you've made it a slam dunk for the IRS. You want to pay yourself something, and you want it to be more than $20,000. You want it to be more like $50,000. You want it to be more like $60,000. Because then the burden of proof is shifted to the IRS to say what you're paying is unreasonable. But if you pay yourself nothing, then you've made the case for the IRS. So you pay payroll taxes based on what you choose or what you declare as salary. And it's just, you know, it's you and your CPA decide what's fair, you know. Yes. The question is, are payroll taxes mandatory? And the answer is yes. If you're declaring salary and wages, then you have to, and you have to pay over the payroll taxes. And there are all kinds of rules on when you deposit them, how frequently you have to deposit them, and so on. You should pay wages, and the payroll taxes on them are definitely mandatory. You're welcome. So, taxation of entities. So a C corporation, you're taxed at graduated rates. So this can actually, if you plan it right, this can actually be a way in which you can manage the amount of taxes that you're paying. So with a C corporation at the federal level, the first $50,000 of income is taxed at a rate of 15%, which is pretty low. Considering if you compare it to what an individual pays, the rates at which an individual pays taxes. However, it jumps from there. The next bracket is 25%. The next bracket after that actually jumps to 39% because they want to phase it out to where you're ultimately, if you have more than $300,000 of income in your C corporation, you're paying tax at a flat rate of 34%. There's an exception which says that personal service corporations are taxed at a flat rate of 35%. What's a personal service corporation? Well, it's where someone is performing personal services. So typically you see this in the case of doctors or accountants or lawyers. If I have a corporation, a C corporation, then I would pay tax at a flat rate of 35%. The state rate in New York State, it's not that simple, but it's a little bit more than 7%. So doing business in New York City, there's a joke that I've heard that goes something like this. New York City taxes only two types of businesses, those that are incorporated and those that are unincorporated. So the corporations pay tax at a flat rate of 8.85% on their net income. And unincorporated businesses pay tax at a rate of 4% with a de minimis threshold. And the de minimis threshold is for an unincorporated business. In other words, if you're a freelance person and you're reporting your income on Schedule C, the rate kicks in, the 4% rate kicks in when your net income is about $115,000. If your income below that is below that, then you're not going to owe the New York City tax. But if you're making more than $115,000, you're going to owe this New York City unincorporated business tax rate. So this is where the calculus comes in for an S corporation. So we said, oh hey, let's go back to the example where we said you had $100,000 of wages, $100,000 of income. You paid yourself $80,000 of wages. You had $5,000 of retirement plan exemptions. So what happens at the city corporation tax level? The city says, okay, you have net income of $15,000, so you're going to pay tax on that net income at a rate of 8.85%. So the trade-off in looking at when you're an S corporation is sort of, well, if I pay myself wages, I'm going to owe self-employment tax on that at 15.3%. If I don't pay myself wages, then I'm going to pay city corporation tax at a rate of 8.85%. Just a refresher on self-employment taxes. The rate, it's comprised of two things. There's the FICA, the Federal Insurance Contributions Act, which is the Social Security portion. If you're self-employed, the rate is 12.4. If you're an employee, it's 6.2%. That goes to about $118,000. If you're making more than that, it stops at that point. The other portion, when you're self-employed, it's 2.9%. It's on Medicare, and that's unlimited. If you're an employee, it's 1.45%. So whatever you make, whatever wages you have, if you make $10 million, you're still paying Medicare tax on that income. So if you're doing a fair amount of business, if you're making more than $100,000 in income and you're paying yourself more than that in wages, it makes sense to pay yourself, continue to pay yourself salary, because while once you get above $118,000, you're no longer paying that 6.2 or 12.4% for the FICA. You've capped out. If you don't pay yourself wages, you're going to pay the 8.85% in New York City corporation taxes. The other thing that you think about is making sure that you're deducting everything that you can possibly deduct through your corporation. Because, for example, if I can deduct if I have rent that I'm paying, or if I'm buying equipment, or if I'm paying expenses for supplies, software, this, whatever. All of those things are expenses that I'm deducting that I'm not paying self-employment taxes on. So you want to make sure that you're maximizing the deductions that you're deducting through the corporation so you don't have to pay yourself wages. Or if you're the sole employee of your corporation, You don't have a 401k plan. You have what's called a SEP, or a Simplified Employee Pension, which is a form of IRA. because that is the best possible way that you can contribute if you're the sole employee of your corporation. Because it's not, it's made with pre-self-employment tax dollars through your S corporation, and it's deductible for New York City corporation tax purposes. It's a win-win there. So, so in terms of people say, at what level should I start thinking about forming a corporation? Where does the math make sense? Because if you think about it, let's say if my choices are I can be a freelancer or I can form a corporation, when does it make sense to start to think about that? I say usually the number that I'll throw out is when you have $100,000 of gross receipts, that's the point at which you want to start to think about it. There are definitely tax savings to be had, even if you're making less than that. But the question is whether or not it offsets the cost of compliance that you're going to have to follow by having a corporation. Because if you have a corporation, the thing that you're going to have to do is that you're going to have to pay a payroll service to take care of all of your payroll filings, you know, to take care of all your withholdings and to file your quarterly reports and your annual W-2s. You're going to have to pay an accountant like me to do your corporate return, and then you're also going to have to do your individual return. So while there are tax savings to be had at lower levels, the money that you're going to have to pay out to take care of all the compliance kind of offsets those tax savings. So it's the point I usually say at around $100,000, that's when it starts to flip and the tax savings that you see through a corporation more than offset the cost of actually conducting and following all the compliance of that corporation. So qualitative and quantitative differences. So I've given you some of the quantitative differences that S corporations can result in lower taxes because you control what you're declaring as wages, so you control the self-employment taxes. You can make sort of pre-self-employment tax contributions to retirement plans. So there are quantitative differences where I could sit down and say, you know, I've done this calculation. Here's an example of this person as a sole proprietor. Here's an example of this person as an S corporation. And, you know, yes, there are savings on the S corporations, but, you know, that those are offset by the additional things that you're going to have to pay for. Then there are qualitative differences. If you've never had to follow the form of paying over quarterly estimated taxes, that's tough. It's particularly if you're self-employed, where you're between gigs, you don't know when your next gig is coming, and you're not quite sure what you're going to do about rent in 3 months from now, and so it's really hard to set aside those taxes that you're not going to pay out for another 3 to 6 months. By having a corporation, you can sort of pay as you go by making sure that you're declaring wages and having withholdings against those wages. So that's what I call a qualitative difference is, you know, some people just say, I'm never going to be able to make my quarterly estimates. It just doesn't happen. You know, I have the best of intentions, and I just never make quarterlies. And then at the end of the year, I owe all these taxes, and I'm in trouble. So, you know, in that case, I say, you know what, having a corporation actually makes a little bit more sense because it helps you to avoid the situation where you get behind in taxes and don't make it up. Yes, yes. The question is whether or not a payroll service is an expense. Absolutely. So the cost of paying for your payroll is definitely deductible. When I think of deductions, the one thing that I say is that I always, you think about it, what's your tax rate? Your tax rate's 40%. So then if I pay out $100, I get to deduct 40 of that. I'm still out the other 60 cents on the dollar. So so the benefit of paying expenses, if you pay expenses and they're deductible, you definitely want to be able to claim them and take the benefit of them. If you don't have to pay them, you're still better off. So, but if you have to pay them, they are a deductible expense. And then with another qualitative difference is making sure that you're observing the proper formalities. That you have to treat, when you have a corporation, you have to treat it as an entity that's separate and apart from yourself. And you have to make sure that you're observing the formalities, you know, making sure that you're writing a check from one account to the other to deal with things, you know, and not treating the corporation like it's your own personal bank account, because that potentially could get you in trouble. So before we move on to the next section, so are there any other questions about sort of entity types and what's the difference and what you didn't talk about? Yes. If you're actively doing business in New York City, then you should be filing a city corporation tax return. They're a little bit more sophisticated than you think about figuring out who's doing business in the city when they have an address outside of it. I attended a residency seminar recently where they talked about it was more focused on individuals who are claiming that they are non-residents of New York City and non-residents of New York State. And the mechanisms that they have for determining that are so much more sophisticated than I believed, and they'll catch you eventually. So it's sort of a matter of time. But the short answer is, you know, if you're conducting business, you have a P.O. box outside of the city, but you're actually doing all your business here, you should be paying city corporation taxes. Any other questions? Yes. So how many people, the question is he just as a curiosity, how many of you are self-employed or freelancers? Okay, great. How many of you have actually formed your own LLC? So maybe about half or maybe about a third, okay? So I'll ask a follow-up question to that is, hang on one second. The follow-up question to that is, how many of you formed it for the idea of limiting your liability? Okay, so that's probably the reason that most people form the entity. And that's a curiosity to me. If you're not concerned about liability, I'm interested in why you would have formed an LLC otherwise. There's a question over here. So what does DBA mean? DBA means doing business as is just a form of being a sole proprietor. I can go to City Hall and file a certificate with the county clerk and pay a $100 fee and get the name Adams Accounting Associates and do business as that. And once I have this doing business as certificate, I can go to Chase Bank and open an account called Adams Accounting Associates. Otherwise, you know, I cannot open a bank account if I don't have that kind of, if I don't have a certificate doing business as. But it's just a way for a sole proprietor to have a name other than Nancy Adams without having to form another entity. Yes. So with an LLC, when you actually form an LLC, you file paperwork with the state, and I can go online with New York State, and I can look up any LLC. In fact, I do that whenever I get a new business, a new client. I'll go online and look up, and it'll be registered with the. It'll tell me the date that the entity was formed. It'll tell me who formed it, who was the incorporator, if you will. So there is legal paperwork that you have to file to form an LLC. With a DBA, technically, if you don't want to open a bank account, you know, Adams account, I could call myself Adams Accounting Associates, but I would need to say anyone who paid me, I would need to say, I can call myself Adams Accounting Associates without going to City Hall and filing the DBA paperwork, but I couldn't open a bank account with that. Citibank or Chase wouldn't let me do that. So you could come to me and say, Nancy, I want you to do my taxes, and Adams Accounting Associates sounds like a great, great firm. And at the end of the day, I would say, please make your check out to Nancy Adams, because otherwise I wouldn't be able to deposit it. But there's no more formality to doing business as than, you know, you could just say, this is how I want to operate. If you want to have a bank account, you would need to get a DBA certificate, but that's it. That's the extent of the formality of it. That is such an interesting question, and I sometimes give seminars on that very topic. And the issue is, I'm sorry. The question is, he said that he often 1099s his crew. What's the point at which I should be treating that crew as payroll as opposed to just 1099ing them? And I said that I have had so many New York State audits on that very question. And the New York State audit, New York State, well, so the question hinges on when is somebody an employee and when is somebody an independent contractor. There is a federal and sort of state definition of that, which says that when someone operates under your direction and your control, they are your employee. And there are facts and circumstances, there are tests that you kind of look at, but the main thing is, you know, how much do you direct what they do? Do you tell them when to come, when to show up? Do they come to your place of business? Or do they accomplish a task independently of you? Do they have specialized skills? Are they in the business of, do they hold themselves out to the general public as being in this business? So for example, New York State auditors have said to me, anyone with associate in their title or assistant in their title is by definition an employee. So production assistant is by definition an employee, always, period, end of story. Assistant editor, always an employee, period, end of story. So you can have a part-time employee just like you can have a full-time employee. So now, as a practical matter, so how does this come up? Okay, the way it comes up is that New York State will look at, most frequently it comes up because you've hired somebody and they work for you for a week, and then they go on to the next job. And the next job, maybe they work there a month, and they're put on W-2 payroll there. So then at the end of that period, they go and they claim unemployment. And so New York State says, well, who did you work for? You said, well, I worked for them. They said, well, what about before that? You said, well, I worked for your this company. And they said, well, what did you do there? Well, I did the same thing. Wait, you were an employee for this guy, but this guy treated you like an independent contractor? I'm going to audit him. So they will come to you. They'll contact you and say, it's not even your fault. And about half the time, it's not even the guy who worked for you. It's not even his fault. He didn't say, I've had cases where the guy who worked for you said, but wait, I was an independent contractor for that guy. I wasn't his employee. And New York State says, I don't care. as a practical matter, it depends on how much production you're doing and how many people that you're employing. And as a matter of fact, it still may be cheaper to treat somebody as an independent contractor and then wait for New York State to audit you. Where the real problem comes up is that if you're ever audited by the feds, and I have to say, I personally have never seen a federal employment audit. Okay, I've been doing this about 30 years, and I have not seen a federal employment audit. That's not to say they don't happen. But if you were determined to have employee for, if someone was determined to be an employee for federal tax purposes, and you treated them as an independent contractor, well, the IRS says, oh, wait a minute, you were supposed to take out at a minimum, FICA and Medicare from this guy's salary. So he worked for you 2 years ago? Wait, you should have filed a quarterly return and deposited your taxes then. That's late. The penalties for late filing and late payment of those taxes is probably about 50%. So not only do you owe the tax, but you owe another 50% on top of that for late filing and late payment penalties. So like I said, that's fairly rare, but there's an outside chance that it could happen. So what happens if New York State comes in and audits you? So New York State comes in and audits you and determines that these people should have been employees. Well, we said that the unemployment rate was about 4.3% on the first $10,000 of wages. So you're going to owe $400, $450 or something for every person that they determine to be an employee, and you're going to owe interest on that. But, again, it may be cheaper for you to say, all right, I'll pay that. Where the trick is, though, is that if the New York State unemployment people say to you, we need for you to go back and file amended returns. You say, no, just bill me for that, please. So you do not go back and file amended payroll tax returns, because then you've opened up the can of worm with the feds to say, I should have been depositing payroll taxes for these people months ago or years ago. So the calculus is, the truth be told, the best way to approach this is you've got to segregate out your employees, the people who are working for you, and say, you know what, these people are never going to stand up in an audit. And I'm going to have to run these, this group, class of people are always going to have to go through, payroll. These other people I can truly treat as independent contractors and 1099 them on it, and then treat it as two different types of people. Some people go through payroll and you pay payroll taxes on them. Some people you can truly treat as independent contractors. So the question is can I just make sure that I have a deal memo with everybody and make sure that nobody has assisted in their title and get them to sign on the dotted line and say they're an independent contractor? And the answer is no. That's not going to be, it's, the states finds that sort of self-satisfying, if you will, they don't necessarily respect what your deal memos say. I'll put it that way. It's one piece of evidence in your favor, but it may not be the most compelling piece of evidence in your favor. So what I'll say is, it's a calculated risk that you take by calling people independent contractors. Maybe it doesn't cost you, and if it does cost you, maybe it costs you less than it would have cost you if you put them on as employees. But the other part of the calculus is if it goes south and goes wrong, it could go wrong in a big way. The short answer is maybe you try to divide up people and say, I'm going to bite the bullet and pay payroll on these guys. Everyone else I'm going to treat as independent contractor. Any other questions? And that's a technical term in the industry, when you're getting screwed. So she makes a point. Ann has made a really good point to say that probably for a lot of you, you probably should be considered employees for the different people that you're working for. And they're making the calculus that, you'll work for less. And you've got to say, if I'm going to be treated as an independent contractor and I'm responsible for all this, then I need a better rate. I need my rate to be at least 8% higher to cover my own payroll, your share of the payroll taxes. But it's a tough question. It's a really tough question. They're sort of playing the audit lottery. So the question is, some employers treat me as a W-2 employee, but other employers treat me as a 1099. Oh, well, within the same corporation, that's tricky. And they could actually, if they're audited, they could actually get in a bit of trouble for that, because the government typically frowns on treating the same person as different, as an employee and an independent contractor. So I'm not quite sure how they're, if it's for the exact same job, I'm not quite sure how they're justifying it. If it's for different positions, different functions that you're performing, perhaps, but I'm not, I can't speak to that. Well, that's a good question. So the question is, all right, so I have been working in New York City and I'm making most of my money in New York City. Now I've moved to a different location, but I'm still making most of my money in New York City. What should I do? Should I close my business there? So the question is, when you say you're making most of the money in New York City, are you still coming to New York to perform services? Okay. The basic rule on services is you are taxed where you perform those services. So if I live in New Jersey but I work in New York, then I am obligated to pay taxes in New York State because that's where I perform the services. Moving to another jurisdiction, like moving to D.C., for example, I might be, well, D.C. is not a good example. I'll come back to that one in a second. But let's say that I move to Pennsylvania, okay? So, but I'm commuting into the city to do the work. I would still owe New York State taxes on the work, but I would no longer owe city taxes if I'm not living in New York City. I only owe city income taxes if I'm actually a resident of the city. Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, it just because you have an LLC, so the question is, well, I have an LLC, and what if, does it make sense for me to close that LLC if I've moved to a different jurisdiction? The LLC, you're required to pay, if you have an LLC that's based in New York, you're required to pay an annual franchise tax a fee. I'm actually doing those forms right now. They're due March 2nd, the IT-204LL forms. You pay a minimum franchise tax to New York State based on your New York source income, okay? Your income tax is going to be based on where you perform the services. So, I can address this point a little bit more. So it doesn't really matter where your LLC is headquartered. You might have minimum franchise taxes. Where your taxation is going to be based is where are you performing the services, not necessarily where you live. It's where do you perform the services. So, no, I wouldn't close my LLC in that case and form an LLC in another jurisdiction. Yes. So the question is, as a person receiving the 1099, are there any negative implications of receiving it if technically you might supposed to be on a W-2? Are there negative, other than, I guess the answer I would say is not really. I mean, not in the perspective that I think that you're asking, like, could this come back to haunt you? The short answer is no. I mean, other than sort of being screwed out of your share of the payroll taxes that, technically the employer should have paid on your behalf, not really. And you do have a couple of advantages. We'll get to this in just a second. Maybe you can claim a home office and kind of offset some of the income that you have and reduce what you ultimately owe self-employment tax on. Maybe you can claim other deductions and net them directly against that income in determining what your self-employment tax is. But no, the IRS is not going to come to you to look to punish you for having been 1099'd. Yes. So the question is, what is the difference between a multiple member LLC and a multiple member LLP? So with a multiple member LLC, one thing is that you have the, I mentioned this, I didn't really expound on it, but you have the choice of deciding how I want to be taxed. The IRS created something they call check the box rules, which basically, the default taxation when you are a single member LLC, the default taxation for a single member LLC is as a sole proprietor. If I choose to be taxed, I can choose to be taxed as something other than as a sole proprietor reporting my net results on Schedule C. The default taxation for an LLC, a multiple member LLC, is as a partnership. However, I can choose to be taxed as a corporation, a C corporation or an S corporation if I choose to be. I have a lot of clients that have formed an LLC and now have chosen to be taxed as an S corporation. But with an LLP, the limited liability partnership, at the end of the day, you are an LLP. You are a partnership. You will be taxed as a partnership. So, but again, the main distinction between LLC and LLP is that typically you see LLPs in the cases of professions, like accountants, like lawyers, like, the doctors, it's, or not doctors, but more accountants, attorneys, that's where you typically see LLPs. So it's typically professional limited liability partnerships. Does that answer? Okay. So great. So I think we've kind of touched on the differences. And one last question before we the difference is if you choose to be it's more expensive. Well, there is no difference. There is no operational difference in terms of how you're taxed, what you pay in terms of fees every year, and so on. If you are an LLC that has chosen to be taxed as an S-corp, you pay the exact taxes that an S-corporation would. The only major distinction is you paid a lot more up front to form your entity than someone who just went the S-corp route.